It started as a side hustle, and I had tried and failed several other side hustles before getting into wholesaling. And this was just the one that, even through the failures, I've stuck through.
Well, they always say, it doesn't get easier, you just get better. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Real Estate Investing Fast Track. I'm your host, Greg Helbeck, and on this podcast, you are going to learn exactly how to be a successful real estate investor step by step by me interviewing some of the top real estate investors and entrepreneurs in the entire country. And there's also going to be a bunch of episodes where I'm just going to individually talk about real estate deals that I've done that have been successful, some deals that haven't been successful. I'm going to talk about my weekly real estate investing lessons, stuff that I've learned from the trenches that you can learn for free on this podcast. So if you're looking to level up your game as a real estate investor or become a real estate investor, this is the podcast to listen to. So if you do get value from the show today, please do me a favor and leave us a review on whatever podcast platform you are listening on so we can get this message in front of more people. And without further ado, welcome to the show. Alex Bradley, welcome to the show, my friend. This is a long overdue interview. I've known you for, Jesus, probably 5 years now, and I've seen you come from the bottom all the way to the top. And today we're going to talk about that journey that you've gone through and you're going through as a real estate investor.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. How did you get into real estate?
Dude, it was desperation, man. Like, it started as a side hustle. I graduated college a couple years prior, found myself in San Diego, raising a family of three, soon to be four, and just being the sole provider. Like, I needed to make extra money. The W-2 just wasn't enough to get by. Even though it was pretty good salary and good benefits, it wasn't enough. We were scraping by. It started as a side hustle, and I had tried and failed several other side hustles before getting into wholesaling. And this was just the one that, even through the failures, I've stuck through. It took me 3 years to figure out how to make money here, but here we are now 5 years later and doing pretty good.
Worth it, right?
Yeah, it is, man. It wasn't easy. And like I said, plenty of failures, but worth it now.
100%. Well, they always say it doesn't get easier, you just get better. So before we get into your business model now and how you really have become a master of dispositions, what was the lowest point and how did you get through that? Because a lot of people hit this in business and they don't know how to solve that problem.
Yeah, man. Summer of 2021 was by far the lowest point. I had left my corporate W-2 job end of 2020. And so 2021 was like my first year fully self-employed. I left that job telling myself, I will never get another W-2 job again. Like, I was feeling good. I was like, I'm going to hit wholesaling, hit the ground running full time. Like, I'm going to crush it this year. And I ended up doing one deal that year, and it was in February. Basically spent the next several months just burning through all of my savings just to try and get by. So I was like supporting my family and trying to run a business, and there was costs associated with that. So I ran out of money and I had to go back to working again. And I had worked as a server in college. So I went back to working at a restaurant. And in the meantime, I was taking courses to get my real estate license. My wife had just gotten licensed and she was doing really good. And so I was like, you know what? That looks like an option here. I can get my license. And the plan was just to save up again so I can relaunch my wholesaling business. But other things happened. I got an opportunity to go work for another wholesaling company at the end of 2021 to do dispo for them. And that's where I'm at now. The beginning of that started.
And that's where you really got your quote unquote 10,000 hours in, really focusing on one thing and becoming a master at that, which in this case is disposition. So let's fast forward. What does your business model look like today in the sense of where are you operating? What does your business look like? And then we'll get into how do you do this? But I like to always start with the big picture and then reverse engineer with the actual tactics.
Yeah, for sure. So it's literally just me and a VA. I've got a disco VA and she works part-time and that's it. I keep it super, super lean. I pay $0 for acquisitions. I've got some marketing and software expenses on the dispo side. But overall, my overhead is between $2,500 and $3,000 a month.
That's amazing.
And like you said, I focus on dispo. So I work with other wholesalers who have deals. And my niche is like helping those guys sell their deals for more than they would using their own buyer's list. I'm able to squeeze my fee in there, usually adding my fee on top, or sometimes they have no offers. And then I bring something in and we just do anywhere, honestly, from 30 to 50% split is what I'm getting on those.
100%. And if somebody doesn't have a buyer, like 50% of something is better than 100% of nothing. I remember one time I was doing a deal in Vegas. I knew it was a deal, but I didn't know how to sell it quickly because the seller really needed to get out of that property. And I could have probably figured it out myself and called through buyers, but I ended up calling my good friend and I was like, hey, I know you live in Vegas. I have a house. I think it's a deal. These are the numbers. If you find a buyer, I'll just split it with you because I don't want to be bothered with it. And I think we split like a $20-something thousand dollar wholesale fee. And I was more than happy to give him half the profit, because if it wasn't for him, I would have had to either spend days and weeks on that and not have that certainty for the seller, or would have not been able to close. So I had no problem when it makes sense to split a wholesale fee 50-50 with someone who has a buyer that I don't even have, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the way. A lot of times people send me a deal, I'm like, I'll be able to let you know within a couple of days if it's promising. And sometimes it's sooner. If it's a smoking hot deal, we'll have it sold within a couple hours.
Oh yeah, 100%. I'm sure you run into this a lot too, where someone will bring you a deal that looks good on paper, but the location is in the middle of nowhere. There's not a lot of buyer activity. Most of the transactions are going through the MLS. And in that case, a lot harder to sell that property, because the way I look at it was, if you have a product and it's the same price as all the other products on the open market, AKA the MLS, a buyer is going to look at that and they're going to say, why would I buy your property for the same, if not more, than what I could buy that's already existing on the market? So you got to make that product really appealing to the buyer, because the whole opportunity is you're getting a wholesale deal below what all the other deals are that are on the market. Therefore, you should be able to make a profit. So let's actually talk about, what areas are you doing this in? Because you're obviously doing a virtual model where you can technically do it anywhere. What areas do you like to focus on where you know you have the best chance to sell those deals for the most money?
Yeah, I do a lot in California. That's where I started. More in Southern California, even like up to the border, and then even some stuff in Central Valley. So California is probably my number one market. I've done a lot in Texas. I've done a good amount in Florida. I've done a few in New Mexico and Georgia. But like you said, we're nationwide. We can technically dispo anywhere. I usually tell people, if you're within 30 to 45 minutes of a metro area and it's a good deal, I'm going to be able to sell it for you. But that's not everything. Like, I just sold a portfolio of 7 single family houses in like middle of nowhere, West Virginia. The entire portfolio was $134,000 for 7 houses. So we sold those things for $18,000 a piece or something ridiculous like that. And we got a $34,000 assignment fee. It's not always the case, but it's a lot easier to sell if we're closer to a metro area.
And you have the resources are all near that city too. Title companies, contractors. Yeah. Like, when a property is like an hour and a half outside of a major metro, they call that a one horse town. There's one real estate agent, there's one title company. Like, they probably never seen a wholesale deal before. That's a good rule of thumb for people who are listening to understand. The closer you are to the metro, the better. In remote areas, it's just harder to sell them. Like, we'll tell the seller, we're going to put this on the MLS, and that's the only way we're going to be able to sell this house, because the private buyers are non-existent for the most part. And we've actually done pretty well doing that. Like, I had a property in Pennsylvania, attempted to novate the property, which means that we were going to ultimately get our contract replaced with a retail buyer. But when we actually just put the property on the MLS and list it for sale, a lot of these smaller towns, you do have cash buyers because they're not that expensive. And then we end up signing that contract, like a typical wholesale deal. And it just makes it a lot cleaner and easier, because when you start doing novations, it just makes the transaction more complex. And you have to be an expert to know how to close those, because there's a lot of other things that are out of your control that can block those deals. Inspections, appraisals, the bank not knowing what's going on, the title company not knowing what's going on. They're totally legal and above board, but a lot of people just don't understand how they work. So it can get a little more complicated.
Yeah, I've done this exact same thing. I think we've done 4 or 5 novations, and we ended up just switching it over to an assignment every time anyways, because we just found a cash buyer on the MLS, and it was just so much easier than we just treated it like a regular wholesale deal.
Exactly. And a lot of these properties do need some work, so they are a little bit more appealing to the cash buyer. And I've just found when you can flip that over to the assignment, it will keep the deal cleaner. Because when you say the word novation, they have no idea what you're talking about. It just means replacement. But when you say assignment, you're like, yeah, I'm taking my contract. I'm assigning it to your client for an assignment fee. Your commission's getting paid off of the final sales price. It's easy to put that together. But the key with the novation here, and then we'll get back on track, is if you're going to do a novation, I've found that the best way to get it to close is if you hire the listing agent on your side as the novator. They got to really know how to do those, because they're the ones communicating with everybody. So if you get a good, preferably a local broker, who owns their own shop and they understand novations, that's a lot easier to get those done, because they don't have as much regulation. They're in full control. Anyway, I digress.
That's a gold nugget. That's a gold nugget for sure.
Oh yeah.
There's so many agents that, like, they want to do deals with you, but there's so much red tape from the brokers, and then they just get stuck.
Exactly. So, they have to ask their broker, and then their broker doesn't know. And then if they don't know, a confused mind always says no. So back to selling your properties in these major metros, California, Texas, Florida, what are you doing to sell them? What software do you use? What does your process look like? And I'm going to just set it up with this. There's 2 schools of thought with wholesaling, and I've done both. I go back and forth. There's the send it out, auction style, highest and best, no relationship. This is a commodity. I've done that successfully and made a lot of money, but I've also done that and the buyers don't like it, obviously. The other way is you text your VIV buyers, and I like to do maybe one at a time, two at a time max. I put the price out. I say, if you can do this price, I'll sell you the house. No bullshit, no bidding war. And that's also worked out. But at the same time, you leave money on the table doing that. So what do you do? Because there's like kind of this happy medium you have to have.
Yeah, man, I'm putting everything on Invest Roulette. It's like the MLS for wholesale deals. It is like the nationwide biggest marketplace for wholesale deals. It's expensive. As a wholesaler, you have to pay to be able to put your deals in their system. I use that for my email marketing platform as well. So I don't have an outside third-party email system to send my deals out. I post my deals on InvestorLift and I email them to buyers through InvestorLift. And we switch it up. Sometimes it's first come, first serve. Sometimes it's, hey, we have a set day that we're reviewing all the offers, submit highest and best by this day and time. It depends on the JV partner that I'm working with on that particular deal, because they have a different process in the way that they want to review and accept offers. And so I do have VIP buyers more in like my backyard in San Diego. I've got people that are like, hey, maybe we can put something together before I put it on InvestorLift. But it's a little bit hard for me to say, here's this deal, give me this price and I can sell it right now, because it's not my deal. I do lose a little bit of control. I need to get an offer and then present it to the JV partner and say, hey, I've got this guy, here's where we're at. Let me know if we can put something together. So because of that lack of control in that part of the deal making, I have to put stuff out there and get a few offers and see what the absolute best is that I can bring to my partner on that deal.
Sure. So let's say you put it out and you get offers. Do you tell the buyers, I'm going to get some offers on this. I'm going to select the highest and best? Because I've ran into this myself where I've put out a property at an offer price. Someone says, I'll take it. And then I'd be like, okay, I'm going to see what other offers I can get and I'll let you know. And then the buyers are like, what the hell? I just gave you your asking price. Now you want to like think about it. And this happens when we're dealing with sellers a lot. So to come up with a solution for that, I would tell the buyer off the bat, 12 buyers are interested. There's one house. This is going to highest and best. This is the time to look at it. After you're done looking at it, you're going to submit the highest and best offer. And that's it. I just did that last week and ended up working out in my favor to the tune of $75,000 over asking price. That was a unicorn property.
Wow.
But the buyers knew what they were getting into before they went to the bidding process. So nobody was really that pissed off at me because I was transparent about that off the bat.
So this is what I do. And it specifically fits my business model, right? Where like I'm doing dispo. And I was scared to have this conversation at first. I thought that I would lose respect from buyers if I went into the conversation this way. But this is what I do. I am transparent. I let them know, hey, this isn't my contract. I'm direct to the contract holder, but they're also shopping it around. They've got buyers. I basically position myself as their buyer's agent, where I'm like, we're on the same team. I'm going to be getting information from the contract holder to figure out where their offers are coming in at. It's not my buyers you're competing against. You're competing against his buyers. We're on the same team. I'm going to let you know where those offers are coming in at so I can figure out where we need to be at to win this property for you. And so I'm getting the buyer on my team.
That's a great way to frame it to that buyer, is you're on their side. You're trying to win the property for them and you're blocking this adversarial situation that a lot of wholesalers and buyers get into. It's like a dog fight. But in your case, you're on the same side of the table. Then you're working with them to get them that property. You're deferring to the wholesaler as the real quote unquote fake decision maker. And then that way they're not angry at you for trying to get them to maybe come up in price so they can ultimately win that property. And no buyer is going to buy a bad property. They're going to obviously have to think about it, talk to their partner, and they're going to make an educated decision. So it's not like they're getting like forced to do something they don't want to do. So yeah, that's a really smart way to handle it. Now let's flip over to your business model. You're getting other wholesalers to bring you properties for you to sell. How do you structure that deal to where, number one, the deal is not getting sent out at two different prices to the same buyers and getting them confused? And then number two, how do you bake your compensation into these deals so it makes sense for everybody involved?
Yeah. So that first part that you said is something that I had started doing last year that I feel like really set me apart from a lot of other wholesalers that just focus on dispo. And like you said, I market that property at the exact same price that the contract holder is marketing it at. If he sends it to me for $500,000, I'm sending it to my buyers for $500,000. I started doing that because I realized there's going to be a crossover every single time between my buyers and their buyers. Not all of them, obviously, but there's going to be like maybe 10%, 15% of buyers that are going to be on my list and that other person's list. And I was running into problems too, where it's like people already saw this deal and they're getting annoyed about that, especially if it's marked up at a different price. As a wholesaler that's trying to just do dispo, that's trying to do only JV deals, like you're going to run into a lot of wholesalers that have really good deals, but they don't want to do JV because they've been burnt by these crappy wholesalers that don't know what they're doing, that, you know, mark up the property and then their buyers are calling them, getting mad, like, what's going on here? Who's got the contract? What's the real price, right? And so I started telling people, I'm going to market this thing at the exact same price that you market at so that there's no confusion in the marketplace of whose deal it is or what price it is. And then what I tell them is to add my fee on top of what you are asking and netting you, hopefully, at least an additional like $5,000 more than you would by selling this to one of your own buyers. So it's all about communication. I'm going to go back to you if I'm selling your deal and you're going to tell me exactly where your offers are coming in at. And you're going to be transparent. Again, my goal is to net you more. How can I net you more if I don't know where your buyers are coming in at? And so I'm just creating that margin in the middle and really just making a win for everybody. So that's like a long answer to how I fit myself in there.
It's a genius way to do it because your business model is a low overhead situation. So if you're making a 5 to 10K wholesale fee in the middle, that makes financial sense for you because you don't have a cost of acquisition at $4,000 or $5,000.
Exactly. I hear a lot of wholesalers are going out of business right now. And I'm like, what's going on? This is the best year that I've had in wholesaling, period. And what I realized is that these wholesaling companies got really good and they started growing. But then as they grew, their overhead grew and they're spending 20, 30, 40, 50K a month on marketing. And it's like, you have 2 bad months and you're out of business. Like the cost of a contract for me is zero. I pay $0 for acquisitions. And so also with Investor Lift, I'm putting a good amount of deals on there. I've got 16 deals that are available right now. And I'm just waiting for inbound calls on people that are interested in those deals. And so I can throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks. It's not going to cost me any more. Yeah. I've got a VA that vets all of the buyers. And so people request information on the property. We send them the address. My VA does all the initial conversation. And once she gets a buyer that's like really serious and she's vetted them a little bit, then I'll hop on a phone with them and try and close the deal out from there.
Yeah. That's a genius business model because you can make 5, 10, 15, 20,000 with zero cost of acquisition practically. Software and a VA is nominal. And you can do that volume game. And that's what you said earlier. This is how a lot of these wholesalers go out of business is their cost to acquire is 10. And then they're selling a deal at 15 or 20. Let's say they're selling it at 15. Their gross profit is $5,000. They have a team. They're out of business, right? There's no margin there. And they're just too expensive to acquire. And then they can't sell those deals. So it's smart how you really found your niche here. And the way that you do the business and the way that you're smart with the pricing, it obviously benefits everyone involved in the transaction. So let's get into one more thing here with Southern California, because this is a market that people just get decimated in. San Diego, for example, are buyers really paying like 85 to 90 cents on the dollar for wholesale deals? Or have you seen, at least in Southern Cal, with the way the interest rates have gone over the last couple of years, these buyers in California are like actually looking for like deeper discounts now because of the way the market's kind of shifted?
Right now, I feel like we're in an okay place. Last year was pretty good. People have gotten used to this high interest market that we've been in. And so it's become the new normal. And I feel like we're back to where we were 5 years ago. Most people, they're trying to do the 70% rule. It's more like I can sell something in 70, 75% of ARV, but not 70% minus repairs, minus fee. But it depends on condition and
location.
Yeah, exactly. It's tough. Honestly, though, like I just look for good deals and I just put stuff out there, like I said, and wait for the offers to come in. And like I'm vetting buyers. And I tell people too, I'm not going to be offended if you lowball me. Like I tell all my buyers, just let me know where you need to be at for this thing to make sense. Before we cancel, we're going to try to get a price reduction and we'll see where we need to end up at. But it's really hard to give you an answer on that because it never really is consistent. Like some deals, people are paying way more than I ever thought they would. And other ones, the offers are coming in way lower. So there's not a number, there's not a formula that really works. So it's hard to say, man.
100%. There's a guy in San Diego, he has his niche. They're the biggest home buyer in San Diego. They wholesale properties to people who need to do 1031 exchanges. So they literally make so much money on these wholesale fees because their buyer is—
they got to get rid of money.
Yeah. The guy's got to sell something and he has to put the money somewhere else and he's got the liquidity. So they'll wholesale the 1031 buyers and make 150K assignment fees because their end buyer doesn't care about the margin. They just need to put their money into a property before the tax man comes and gets them. So the point of that is every buyer is not the same, right? Like some buyers are buying for rent. deals and they don't care about the discounts and they just need to make sure it cash flows. Other buyers are fix and flippers who need that margin. But the thing is, like, some of these fix and flip buyers, they're actually cash and they actually have their own crews, so they can pay more because they don't have this crazy construction markup and they don't have 40 grand of interest they're paying. So they can ultimately pay another 80 grand for the property and they don't do volume. So if they do one deal a quarter, you know, that's all they really need. And they rely on wholesalers versus the buyers who do their own marketing and they get hard money and they have their own contractors they hire. Those people never pay the most money because they need a big discount to make that work because of their operation setup. So when you put your property on VestorLift and you email it to your huge buyers list, you're going to get so many different buyers coming in.
So like a point on what you said too, not all buyers are the same, but also a buyer is going to be different in where he's offering based on where he is at right now. Like I've had deals where a buyer's like, I just need to keep my crew busy right now. And so I just need to buy a house. You know what I mean? Like they know they're not really going to make much on it, but they have to keep their crew busy. So they'll pay a little bit more just to keep the machine running smoothly. Yeah. And then what you said too, the buyer that does all of their own marketing, dude, I love that buyer. In my business model, that is my favorite buyer because they're now my new acquisition partner because they're doing all of their own marketing. They can't buy all 10 deals, all 10 opportunities that are coming their way. So they want to start wholesaling that stuff, but they've been cash buyers and they've been buying from wholesalers for the last few years, but they don't have a built out buyer's list. They've got like their friends, especially in San Diego, right? All the big buyers know all the big buyers. Yeah. And so they'll get a deal and they'll try to shop it to like the five other big players in San Diego. But if those guys don't want it, they come to me and then I'm going to bring them a buyer that they don't know and I'm going to help them sell that deal. And my biggest deal that I've ever done that I closed last month came from a previous buyer that had a deal he wanted to wholesale.
San Diego?
And he made San Diego. He made a $225,000 assignment fee and I made 40 on top of that.
Where was that? What neighborhood?
Linda Vista.
Dude, that's sick. That's San Diego for you, man. It's like the land of big deals.
But yeah, that's the key. I want to say like for anyone that's like trying to get into this kind of little niche that I've found myself in, have a conversation with every single buyer. Talk to a dozen buyers every single day, right, on the deals that I'm working on. And I just throw into our conversation, hey, by the way, if you get any deals that you want to try on the wholesale market, let me know. I'll post it up on InvestorLift for you. It doesn't cost you a thing. And I'll bring you some offers and we'll see if we can get you an assignment fee that makes sense for you not to buy this thing yourself.
That's amazing. As we start to wind the showdown, so question for you on logistics with these people, because you're JVing these deals. Are you signing a JV agreement after you find a buyer? Like, how do you protect yourself so you could still get paid for the work that you've done?
I think technically you're not allowed to market a property that you don't have equitable interest in. So I should be signing like option agreements or something like that up front with people, just so someone doesn't get pissed off at me and come after me. I need to tighten it up a little bit. But what I'm doing right now is, honestly, because I'm doing a good amount of volume, I don't want to send out a JV contract for every freaking property because not all of them are going to sell. Most of them aren't going to sell, at least not through me. And again, it's a selling point too for the wholesaler that I'm working with. I let them know, hey, you don't have to sign any contract with me. Send me the information. Prove to me that you got this under a contract holder and I'll market it and I'll let you know where the offers are coming in at. If you decide to work with me, we'll work it out. I'll either send an invoice in that has my assignment fee on it. We'll send that to escrow and they can pay me that way. Or I've got a couple different JV contract options. So I'm pretty flexible depending on the other wholesaler and just how advanced they are and like whatever's going to be the easiest for everybody.
100%, man. That's smart. So, quick story and then we'll wrap the show up. I actually almost got my clock cleaned out in a lawsuit on a wholesale deal. And I bet you've never heard of something like this happening before, Alex. So I actually went into contract with a JV guy on a wholesale deal in New York. So I actually locked it up in my LLC. The guy that I was JVing with, like we had like a handshake agreement. So I locked the deal up. I put it out to my buyer's list. I find a buyer who actually signs a contract with me. And then while that's going on, the property was on a lockbox and some other buyer went inside the property before we found the buyer we ultimately were going to sell it to. And they turned the lights on and then they turned the lights off. They walked out and the property burned down to the ground. I almost got smoked because I didn't get the formal lawsuit served to me, but I got an email basically saying you're about to get steamrolled. And it was called punitive damages, which is really bad. I was like, this is not good. If there's evidence to support that the buyer that went in through James and Greg caused the fire, we're going to get sued for at least six figures. But when we pulled the fire report, it said that the fire had nothing to do with anyone going in the house. It was a complete freak accident, like electrical fire in the dryer vent. So I had to hire an attorney and we had to send them all the evidence and they knew they had no leg to stand on. So I ended up getting dismissed. But the wholesaling business can be a liability when you're talking about people going into properties, getting hurt, houses burning down. So people think if you're wholesaling, oh yeah, the only thing you can do is lose your deposit. So point of that story is if you're a wholesaler, you got to really understand what you're getting into. There's got to be quality control. But anyway, I digress. Alex, you've built a great business, man. I've seen you start from the ground up and now you really found your niche and you're thriving. So if people want to do a deal with you, if they're in Southern California, Texas, Louisiana, wherever you do business, what is the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Honestly, Instagram. I just say slide into the DMs. I check that pretty often. So if you hit me up there, I'll get back to you.
What is your Instagram account?
It's Alex_Dadley, D-A-D-L-E-Y. It's like a play on my last name.
Alex Dadley on Instagram. If you have a deal, he's posting deals. I follow this guy every day. He's got a new deal. So we'll put that Instagram handle in the show notes. And do you have any last words for the listener, maybe a new investor who's struggling right now? They want to figure it out. What is your final advice for them?
Yeah. If you're a newbie wholesaler, do not go out and buy a ton of data and skip trace it and cold call it and spend 10 grand trying to do acquisitions. Hit me up. I'll show you how to get deals for free.
Look at that, right from the horse's mouth. Alex, thanks so much for being a guest on the show, and I will catch you soon, buddy.
Awesome, man. Appreciate you.